Chris, what are we listening to?
Let's move on up by Curtis Mayfield. Curtis Mayfield, the late great Curtis Mayfield, born on this day in 1942. I guess we'll send that out to any NBA team looking to move up in the draft.
Okay, before we get into all that, I just got to check on you, my guy. How are you doing? Are you still alive after all of this moving you've had to do?
Yeah, we're settling in. As you know, we're not 100% there. I'm still trying to get my internet hooked up. The heavy lifting is done. The days of like just working on stuff like all day long are over. We're into this is week two we're starting. So this is more the like do a couple hours a day to keep pushing the rock up the hill. And maybe we'll get it up the hill by the end of the week. But a lot of the house is set up at this point. We still got some boxes left to unpack. And the deck and the garage are just jumbles of stuff that haven't been dealt with. But we're getting there.
Obviously, you have to hire movers when you move halfway across the country, right? But I am curious. Well, or did you? You've made a lot of trips up there.
Yeah. It was a little bit of a complicated process. But the bulk of our stuff, we moved in two different pods, and my son and I, with a little bit of help from my brothers and my dad, packed one of the pods ourselves. And then the second pod, we hired people to load because we wanted to get it done quickly. And then we hired people to unload the pods here, but it wasn't like one big moving truck. It was two separate pods that were moved and stored. And even then, we found out the two pods that we had signed up for weren't quite enough. So we ended up driving a U-Haul truck up ourselves with some leftover stuff. Some of that we knew we weren't going to put in pods, like the record, my record collection and my vice plants and stuff like that. We had other stuff. We just had too much stuff. So I did drive a U-Haul truck up here that we had to unload ourselves. But the bulk of our stuff moved in pods and was unloaded by other people.
I do not envy you because moving, I think, is probably a bottom three activity that everyone probably has to do at least once at some point in their life. It's pretty terrible trying to put everything in boxes and make sure nothing breaks, and especially like packing up your kitchen. I mean, I just recently did it last year. It's terrible. But I wonder, because I just wonder how much of a help your son was, because
not a lot.
Really?
He's 14.
He's a big, strong guy, though. Big strong
guy. He is
a
big strong guy. No. When I sort of prodded him into action, he was a help, and we moved some heavy furniture together for sure. But it took a lot of prodding. The instinct at 14 is towards laziness, I think, and so it definitely takes some provocation to get him into action. That's for certain.
Okay, so we haven't recorded a pod. We didn't record a podcast last week because you had a lot going on. You have, you may have already discussed this with Jeff, but you have not discussed this with me. You put out a top nine. Is that nine in order of how you like them? Last week, last Friday, you posted this.
As of the moment I wrote it, yes. It's a little different from what we did on the pod. So you can see, opinions change day to day a little bit on this stuff. But I made it a little bit longer. I went to nine instead of eight, which we did on the pod. And I excluded one more player in Ricochet, which I think we now know is also going to be off the board. So that allowed a room for a couple of additional players that weren't on the list that we did on the pod.
So have you changed your opinion on Klingon? We've had the discussion of the day has been, you probably haven't had a chance to read it yet, but I wrote that the piece about,
No, I have read it. And that's sort of the overarching question over all of this, right?
Yeah.
We don't know. We don't know what the Grizzlies' approach is philosophically and how that's going to impact not only the draft but the whole offseason. I don't feel like I know the answer to that. I think there's been a lot of assumptions on in different ways, but I think they're just assumptions. And so I do think that's an overarching thing. As far as Klingon, there's a question for me to agree that my opinion matters, like what I think about Klingon. Then there's a slightly separate question of what do I think about Klingon in relative to what I think the Grizzlies think, right? Which is a slightly different thing. And I'm as uncertain as I may be about my own opinions, I'm even more uncertain of what, me guessing the Grizzlies' opinions are.
Right. Yeah, no, and this is that was just an attempt to infer what one path may be, right? If that was the choice. We also got just to get into your list a little bit more, we got some player comps from ESPN today. I found.
Yeah, well, let me say one thing overarching about that. Some of those are pretty good, but whenever people do these kind of things, some of the low end comps are way too high on some of these guys. Like the low end comp on everybody is like you're out of the league in 3 years. That is the low end comp on everybody. The low end comp. There is nobody whose low end comp is Trey Murphy. Because Trey Murphy's really good.
Right. Yeah. Well, no. That's a they had Ricochet here. High end comp Chris Middleton with more defense. Low end comp Trey Murphy. But some of these are interesting.
Trey Murphy is more like the mid level comp. Like that'd be good. If you took Trey Murphy in like fourth in a draft, like that's not great, but that's okay, you know?
Some of these are fascinating just because the crossover of names is interesting. Yeah. Sar, who we know the Grizzlies probably will not be able to draft. High end, they said Jaren Jackson Jr., which I think we've actually noted that they were similar type players.
Yeah.
Low end, Nick Claxton, another player that has been discussed often.
Yeah. Well, that's the other one that's too high for a low end. Like Jared is better than Nick Claxton, definitely. But, like, Nick Claxton's good. Yeah, like, you know, he's a quality starter. When people talk about it, it's an all-defensive guy. That is not the worst-case scenario with Alexander Sarr. Like, Jonathan Bender is the worst-case scenario with Alexander Sarr.
Matas Buzelis, I hope I pronounced that correctly, found this one funny. High-end, beloved
very
Memphis
Grizzly.
Grizzly. Chandler Parsons.
Yes.
Low end, Kyle Anderson. Probably the, I mean, Kyle Anderson has to be, at least from a media perspective, one of the more beloved yet just a role player Grizzly of all time,
right,
versus Chandler Parsons, who was probably, I mean, I would guess he's maybe the most hated Grizzly of all time by its own fan base. So interesting they went with those two there.
Well, not only do you have the Grizzlies connection, but like those players are kind of different, you know? I mean, they're both like, you know, 6'9 forwards, and they both have a little versatility in terms of being able to, you know, at their primes, being able to handle the ball a little bit. But Chandler Parsons was a really good shooter and not much of a defender, and Kyle Anderson is like not a very good shooter and a great defender and rebounder. So like those are pretty different paths to go down. And not a lot of qualitative difference either. I know that Chandler Parsons' best, he was more of a scorer than Kyle Anderson. I don't think the best version of Chandler Parsons is that much better than the best version of Kyle Anderson as a basketball player. So really just talking about like two different paths in terms of how your skills develop.
Stephon Castle, who was number one on your list, you're staying strong on that.
Yeah.
Before I even give you the comments, you're staying strong on that, huh? Even with the point guard questions.
It's still a process of elimination thing for me. It's not like an aggressive, I love Stephon Castle. It's just that I'm finding it hard to love anybody, and that is the guy who I think is the safest bet from what I can see to be a good NBA player. But the low-end comp is interested on him on this.
Yes, it's high-end Andre Iguodala, another person who Grizzlies fans are not a huge fan of.
This is another very, very Grizzly-centric comp. Yeah.
And low end Justice Winslow, who the Grizzlies once traded for, and that didn't work out rather quickly.
So the thing about Winslow, yes, his shooting did not come around, and that's the biggest question with Castle, but he also had just all kinds of injury problems. And so if you have a Justice Winslow who never has injury problems, that's probably a lot different career than the one he actually had, even with the shooting issues.
Neither of those players are point guards either.
No, and I'm not convinced. Castle may think he's a point guard. I'm not convinced he's a point guard. And so that's part of my thing of having him number one. I'm like, you're a good basketball player and you want to win and this will take care of itself. Like I'm skeptical of the idea that he's going to be a full-time quote-unquote point guard. I think he'll be a wing who has the ball a lot. Whether that's like Andre Iguodala, who like was a playmaker on the wing, or like Winslow, who people call like a point forward, or whether that's like a DeMar DeRozan, Jimmy Butler, like you're really a wing, but you handle the ball a lot. I just think that's what Castle's going to be.
All right, I want to move on to the finals for a little bit. We also haven't had the chance to discuss this, so this will be fresh. I know this isn't necessarily your type of thing, Chris, but I wonder,
uh-oh,
how much of a storyline do you think it's going to be that Boston fans are just totally ruthless to Kyrie Irving. Like, are we going to sit here a week from now and that's what you and Jeff are going to be talking about on the radio is how ruthless they were on Kyrie? Or are we going to be talking about the actual game?
Could be. There's a lot. There's some history there, obviously, with Boston and Kyrie Irving. If I'm a Boston Celtics fan, I am wary of the world's opinion of Boston Celtics fans, you know? And
yeah.
So I don't know how much I'd want to be, like, viciously booing, like, the black player who left, you know, just because I'd be worried about how that would be taken, you know? And so I don't know. I would wonder about that a little bit.
Yeah. It's a little dicey. It's going to be a little dicey. And I'm curious to see what – because Kyrie – it feels like, I just said this in the last segment too, it feels like he's found peace, right? Like, he just seems like a different player altogether in Dallas. And is going back to Boston and going through that, is that going to be what disrupts that peace? Or is he just going to not address it, not go for it, not, you know, bite? I'm fascinated to see how that's going to work out, because it is going to be dicey.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we won't know till it happens. My guess is that he won't instigate any additional controversy off of that. That's going to be my guess. I think because he is just in such a good flow right now and with that team. Of course, it may depend on how the series goes, but I would guess that that's going to be somewhat less of a storyline than it seems to be going in.
Is Porzingis the game changer for Boston? Or if he doesn't play, I mean, we all expect that he probably will play, but how big of a difference does he make? Because he is going to have to bar Luka a lot. You would guess that they're going to try to get switches on him, and that calf's going to get tested.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I mean, can you how much can Dallas get that matchup, and how much could Boston avoid that matchup is a thing. But, you know, Porzingis gives them, as good as Boston is without him, and, like, they've been selling through these playoffs, he adds a dimension that is not otherwise there on the team. As good as Al Horford is. Horford is not a rim protector like Porzingis is. Like, I remember when Boston came in this season, they had Porzingis, was active when they came in, and, like, he just swallowed up everything. When you put the level of defense Boston has on the guard, and on the wings with those four guys, and you put a 7'3" shot blocking rim presence behind them, you know, that's rough stuff. And so I think the value he brings defensively, it'll be an interesting thing to get tested. The value he's going to bring defensively is going to be greater than the ability for Dallas to pick it, you know, the weaknesses defensively, but we'll see.
You know, how do you just view this series as a whole? Who's got a better chance of winning? And I ask that because I was a little surprised that Boston is a big favorite to win still, just because it feels like Dallas is rolling right now more so than they have been at any point. And I think you could honestly make the argument that Dallas has been perhaps the best team in the league down the final stretch.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a good point. That's something I was going to say. I think from a distance, it looks like a classic great team versus great player situation. But I, you know, broken clock, you know, right twice a day, and I think the Timberwolves are losing the Suns. What do I know? But I picked the Mavericks to make the Western Conference Finals, to win two rounds of the playoffs before the playoffs started. And it wasn't just because I thought, well, Luka's so great. It's because I thought that team, to your point, post-trade deadline, if you look at teams post-trade deadline, they weren't the fifth best team in the West. I think they became a better team, top to bottom, a team that made more sense together. And so they are better than their seeding. They were better than their seeding once the playoffs started. So it's not a case of, like, superstar Luka dragging an inferior team against this juggernaut Boston. It's a case of a team that sort of stepped up to the level it needed to get to around the superstar in Luka. But I think the team is – Dallas is good enough that if Luka is great, Luka can win the series. But I do think ultimately it's going to be about the ascendance of Luka against the overdue sort of coronation of the Celtics team that's been knocking on the door for, you know, 7-8 years at this point.
If Boston can't get this done, if they get close again and they don't get past Dallas, at what point do you have to ask questions about your core of stars? Because we got to remember, they're in the finals, right? But there's still going to be a lot of doubts about if those guys are good enough to get it done. To me, I'm pretty satisfied with the team getting to the finals, and you're close enough where I feel like you just need to keep trying, right?
I think, to me, there's no question about their player. The question is about, can you do, in the NBA, can you win without a top five player? It's not a question of whether these guys are clear superstar or top five level players. They're not. I think that's answered. The question is, can you have a team good enough to win a title without that kind of individual player? And Boston is a test case of that. Because they got, like, all five starters are all-star level players. And Tatum's like maybe a top 10 guy, right? Like a 7, 8, 9, 10 guy, not a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 guy. So if a team can win a title without an MVP-level player, it's got to be this team. Like it feels like as good a team as you could build without having that player on it. But they don't have that player, and Luka is that player. And so there's no mystery about the Boston players. The mystery is just whether that kind of team can beat an MVP-level player.
Is Boston your pick to win this series?
I think they have to be. I just, you know, at some level, like, you sort of got to believe what you've seen. And, like, they dominated the league start to finish. They've run through these playoffs. I know they haven't had a lot of competition, but they've run through the playoffs without Porzingis. So they're probably going to get him back. And so, yeah, Boston's my pick to win the series. But, you know, I'll sort of say the same thing. I feel a little bit better about Boston than I did about Minnesota. But I did pick Minnesota in the West Finals. But what I said was, don't take it for granted. Like, I what I said on that series was, Minnesota's probably going to win this series, but I wouldn't assume it. And that's sort of the way I feel about this. I think Boston's probably going to win this series, but it's not going to shock me if they don't.
I do think we also learned something stylistically, because we, you know, as Minnesota was in the process of beating the Nuggets, we asked, you know, do you need another big? Because look around at the West. You've got, you know, you got Denver with Jokic. You've got Minnesota with the bigs. And then here comes Dallas with their mobile rookie big man who proved to pose all kinds of problems to, you know, to Minnesota, who had just taken down the Nuggets. Does that kind of just show that you don't necessarily have to play one style or think about how you match up with any specific team, and that whatever direction you decide to go, as long as you build that well, you can win in the NBA?
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of my feeling. I'm really reluctant to sort of claim there's only one path to get to the end. And I'm reluctant to just say you have to emulate whatever just won the year before, or to say you have to build a team to match up with whatever just won. I think there are multiple paths to get there. The real commonality is having an MVP-level player. And that's the challenge to Boston. That's also the challenge to Memphis. You know, John Morant's great, all-NBA-level player. Jason Tatum's great, all-NBA-level player. The teams that win titles don't have an all-NBA-level player. They have an MVP-level player. And if you're a Grizzlies fan, like, root for Boston to win the series to show you that you have a good deep team with lots of good players. You don't have to have like one of the two or three best players in the league necessarily to win it. To me, that's the question for the Grizzlies. But stylistically, yeah, I mean, if you look at the Dallas team, like, when you think about how big men, like, the bigs they have, they're not posting those bigs up. They're not feeding them the ball. They're also not spotting up. They're not shooting threes. So what are they doing? They're catching lobs. And so that's one thing. When you have bigs that can space vertically, they don't space horizontally, but they space vertically, and you have a brilliant passer with dominating your offense with Luka, like, that's one way, you know? And the Grizzlies could emulate that, right? The Grizzlies, John Morant probably is not as good at Luka in everything, but getting into the teeth of the defense and, like, finding guys at the rim with lobs, he probably is as good at Luka as that, right? Imagine John Morant with those two centers. They'd be catching lobs and throwing dunks all the time with him, too. You know, Ja also good with, like, big centers to set picks. You imagine Ja good with a five-out offense and lots of space. I don't think there's only one way to go. The Grizzlies may prefer a path, and we're all trying to guess that, but to me, it's not true that there is only one path. I mean, there's all kinds of paths they can take and get to where they want to go, or at least be as good as they can be without having an MVP-level guy.
Is it better to make this move to Minnesota in the summer when you get to soak in a summer that's not just scorching hot and get to experience that? or better to just move in the winter and have something to look forward to? What do we
well,
think?
Well, you don't want to move in the winter because you don't want to be moving stuff.
Oh, that's
in the cold. So that's an easy answer. Now it's rained basically every day since we've been here, and I'm kind of annoyed by that. Like, I got a lot of like rain soaked stuff on the deck I need to be dealing with. It's all messy now and like wet and whatever. But you don't want to be moving in the winter. That's for sure.
Speaking of your kids, like how do you think your son's going to adjust to the freezing cold? Probably not used to it.
They've both been coming here their whole lives because of my wife's family. But there's a difference between visiting for 4 or 5 days and living in a place. And so, yeah, I think the winter is going to be an adjustment. Honestly, it's going to be an adjustment for all of us. It's going to be an adjustment for my wife who grew up here. Like, you know, she thinks of herself more as a Southerner now than a Midwesterner. She's lived in Memphis for 25 years, you know? And so, like, we're all going to have to adjust.
Well, I haven't been there in a while, but I was, you know, I made it up there for the playoff series. I've been up there for a few road games. I really like Minneapolis as a city. The Skywalk is really cool. You can get anywhere in the city, even when it's freezing, without having to go outside. Like, that was really cool.
I'm not in Minneapolis, Drew. I'm in St. Paul.
Okay.
You got to understand. Sorry. That's a separate place. It's across the river.
I have not been to St. Paul yet.
Like, I can't decide whether St. Paul is the Memphis to Minneapolis' Nashville or St. Paul is the Memphis to Minneapolis' West Memphis. I'm still trying to decide that.
Well, it's not 3 hours away. I mean, Nashville feels like an entirely cultural different experience.
Right. There is a little difference culturally.
I've never been to St. Paul, but I imagine that it's not that obvious, you know?
It's just funny. My wife has been here since November when she started the job, for the most part. And she said she's gone to Minneapolis like 3 times.
Well, and you have the Minnesota Wild in St. Paul, correct? They're in St. Paul. They're not in Minneapolis.
Is that the hockey team?
Yeah, the hockey team.
Yes, they're in downtown St. Paul. My neighborhood team is the Loons.
Okay, the Loons. Nice. MLS. Yes. I haven't made it to an MLS game, but we did watch a Loons game. I watched a Loons game with Rob Fisher one time in Minneapolis. That was a good time. But I suspect that summer is going to be nice for you to soak in without it being, you know, 95, 100 degrees every single day. That should be enjoyable for you.
Yeah. Summers in Minnesota, winters in Memphis. That's my plan.
Yeah. Well, that would be great. We need you here as much as possible for NBA basketball. Thanks, Chris.
Thanks, Drew.